Welcome to another ABC Radio National podcast. For more information, go to abc.net.au/rn.
Time for your smart drugs, listener. Natasha Mitchell joining you for All in the Mind on ABC Radio National. Welcome. On April 1st this year, yes, you get the picture, a new World Anti-Brain Doping Authority was launched to respond to concerns that growing numbers of scientists were popping pills that give them intellectual edge over their colleagues. April Fool's jokes aside, this issue is a crucial one, as you're about to hear. We're entering an era of cosmetic pharmacology or neuroenhancement, with kids already trading the ADHD medication Ritalin in the playground and healthy heads popping drugs designed for serious sleep disorders, just to help them stay alert, be weller than well. Smarter than smart.
Caffeine for many people is a form of enhancement, but with psychotropic drugs, even if it is a matter or a difference of degree rather than kind, it's a very significant difference that the effects of these agents is more immediate, more significant than caffeine or other substances that many of us take every day.
I think the problem comes when you begin talking about human enhancement, actually consciously taking over the evolutionary process. And I think that's problematic for me for a number of reasons. I mean, there are utilitarian safety concerns, but beyond that, I think there's some real philosophical issues about whether we actually know enough as to what constitutes an improvement in the human species. And look at the last 200 years where people have tried to socially engineer better societies using very crude things like labor camps and agitprop and so forth. And now it seems to me we are beginning on a period where you're going to be able to come at this problem again, but you're going to use tools like neuropharmacology. I mean, a lot of technological ways of manipulating the way we humans are that I think could easily have as disastrous social consequences as 20th century social engineering.
Are we, as we increasingly take cognitive or neuro-enhancing or smart drugs, are we moving towards a new normal and losing touch, in a sense, with our authentic selves?
I mean, it's very interesting because I know working with children with ADHD that some children see themselves as the person that they are when they're on the drug. They feel that it helps realize their potential. For other children, they feel like they're themselves off the drug. So I think it's a very interesting question. There's many more other interesting questions to do with the ethics and the personhood, but also with society. What kind of a society are we turning into? Will we use these drugs to our benefit? So will we decide that we're going to get in a good day's work, finish early, go home, see our families, have a better work-life balance? Or are we just going to go headlong into a manic 24/7 society where we're just working all the time because now we can do that?
Barbara Sahakian, who's Professor of Clinical Neuropsychology at the University of Cambridge and a guest of the Alfred Deakin Lectures in Victoria this past week, before her renowned scholar Francis Fukuyama, whose 2002 book Our Post-Human Future reflected on the morality of messing with our minds and the possibility we might be fundamentally changing who we are. Barbara Sahakian has over 200 papers to her name and is a leader in the investigation of drugs which target attention, concentration and other cognitive problems in neuropsychiatric disorders like Alzheimer's, schizophrenia or ADHD. Drugs like methylphenidate, that's Ritalin. But she's now compelled to consider the potentially huge impact of her research on healthy heads too.
So we're finding these cognitive enhancing drugs, but in part of our studies we use healthy humans. So we often use young healthy humans. One of the studies with methylphenidate actually used some Cambridge undergraduates who were functioning at a very high level, as you can imagine. But nonetheless, we saw improvements in cognition. As we began to report on these studies and the press heard about them, they were much in the media, and then it became clear that people started to take certain of the drugs. So one of the more recent ones I've been working with, modafinil or Provigil, has become a very popular drug for healthy humans to use as a cognitive enhancing drug.
Now, just to explain what that is, modafinil was ostensibly manufactured to treat narcolepsy, the sleep disease, wasn't it?
Yes, that's right. So it was for narcolepsy or excessive daytime sleepiness, and it's now also marketed in America for shift workers.
What does it do?
Well, nobody's quite certain how it acts to promote the cognitive enhancing effects, but it may be that it acts indirectly on acetylcholine.
And that's a neurotransmitter in the brain, a chemical in the brain.
And we know that Ritalin, which is, as you say, a stimulant drug, is acting by enhancing dopamine and noradrenaline function in the brain. And so we have these different mechanisms of actions for these different drugs.
The thing about modafinil ultimately, though, is that it keeps you awake. And so that's why it's finding interest and application in military circles, keeping soldiers awake in combat for extended periods of time, sometimes over days. Mm.
Yes, that's correct. But interestingly, in the studies that we used, we didn't sleep deprive anybody. So people came in, they were healthy humans, we gave them modafinil, and we found some good improvements both in their memory function and in other functions such as planning. So the types of things we'd use all the time in our daily work. So obviously, because I know that some of these drugs are being widely used by healthy humans, some of whom are getting them from the internet and so forth, I started becoming interested in the ethical aspects of this. And we also know that Ritalin in the United States is being widely used as a cognitive enhancing drug, and 16% of some students on college campuses are using it. And certainly prescriptions for Ritalin are increasing in America and in the UK.
Just looking at that Ritalin use on college campuses, it's actually staggering the number of students reportedly using Ritalin who don't have a diagnosis of ADHD. They're using it to stay bright and on the ball for exams and the like. Where are they getting the Ritalin from if they don't have a diagnosis of ADHD?
Well, that's a very interesting question. I think it raises a number of issues. I mean, one is that there's a sort of broad spectrum for ADHD. So at one end of the extreme, people clearly have a very severe illness which needs treatment with drugs in order that they can function properly. But at the other end, prescriptions are being given to the more mild end of the spectrum, which perhaps psychological therapies, cognitive behavioral therapies, might be more appropriate, better way to go. Some people are obviously getting it by finding people who have a diagnosis of ADHD and actually getting it from them. I have heard reports by a colleague of mine of her observing people swapping it in the library of her well-known university. So,
yes, I've heard that there is a bit of a black market going on even amongst teenagers and even younger than that for Ritalin.
Really quite young people have got hold of the drug and are using it. So it's essentially illegal abuse of the drug. And some drugs you can just get off the internet. But I'm very concerned about that because I think people don't know what they're getting. They don't know if they have another medical condition or if they're on some other drug. It might be a very bad drug-drug interaction. So I think it's important that if healthy humans are going to use cognitive enhancing drugs, that we make them safe and effective, and that we also don't have ones with substance abuse potential.
There hasn't been anything definitive yet, but there are studies being conducted trying to determine just how effective Ritalin is in enhancing not just cognitive functions to perform better on an examination, but just but cognitive functions in a general sense across the board.
Philosopher Walter Glannon is Canada Research Chair in Medical Bioethics and Ethical Theory at the University of Calgary and author of Bioethics and the Brain.
And it will be very interesting to see what those studies show.
Sure will, because we just have no sense of what long-term use of a stimulant like Ritalin might do to kids who are taking it for ADHD, let alone people who don't have a diagnosis.
And it's especially ethically significant in the case of children and adolescents because their brains are still developing, and there's some concern that long-term use of these agents would alter the neural circuitry in ways that may not be beneficial or benign. It's still not known for sure whether that is the case, but that is a concern.
Coming back to the drug modafinil, which is, you know, for narcolepsy, a sleep disease or disorder, what have some of your colleagues told you? Because you've had some interesting conversations with fellow scientists who use it often.
Yes, it was remarkable. When I first heard about colleagues using it, I was at a meeting in Florida, and I was quite tired, quite jet-lagged, and I had to get up and speak. And I complained to my colleague, oh, they would put me in the late afternoon slot, I'm really tired. And he said to me, would you like some of my modafinil? And it took me back a bit. First, that he would be using it, and second of all, that he would offer it to me. But then I went around to a few other conferences, and I thought, well, I'll just ask around, and I found that more and more colleagues were using it. One person reported that they actually used it not just for cognitive enhancing, but to enhance their participation in a late-night party. But also there was a professor in Oxford who reported that he took it really just to get a good day's work in, to really be able to focus.
Coming to the survey that was released by Nature Journal earlier this year, this was a survey of roughly 1,500 of its readers. Now, this is an ostensibly science-literate audience. Lots of medicos would read Nature. And the results were quite staggering, weren't they? Just reveal some of them to us.
Yes, it was quite staggering. You know, about one in five had taken a cognitive-enhancing drug. So one wonders, really, if we look more widely, what might happen.
I mean, this is a very serious issue because we don't know the long-term risks of taking medications like this that ostensibly are developed for particular disorders or diseases, and yet now well people are taking them as well. No idea. There's been no clinical trials over long periods of time of well populations of these medications. So what are the potential risks?
I'm glad you brought that up, Natasha, because I think it's incredibly important that we do need to have long-term studies in healthy humans. And of course, part of the problem of this is that regulatory bodies, the FDA, the MHRA, and other bodies such as that, are really looking at treatments for medical conditions. So they're not dealing with drugs that healthy humans may want to take to enhance cognition. I'm particularly concerned about long-term effects in the developing brain, so in children taking cognitive-enhancing drugs. And we know that the brain is still developing well into the late teens, early 20s. With these drugs being used, possibly over a long period of time, by young people, that maybe there will be unfortunate long-term effects that we have to be concerned about. So I think it's a very important problem that you brought up, and it needs more thought.
Professor Barbara Sahakian joining All in the Mind on ABC Radio National with me, Natasha Mitchell, across the world on Radio Australia, online and as podcast. And today, the science and ethics of smart drugs for well minds. Bioethicist Walter Glannon has just penned a paper about the push for smart drugs in the inaugural edition of a new journal called Neuroethics, edited by Australia's own Professor Neil Levy. One of the drugs he considers is the wakefulness-promoting drug Barbara mentioned, modafinil. It's a drug the armed forces have certainly been interested in. With it, combat soldiers may well stay awake for perhaps days on end, drugged, sleep-deprived and armed.
Modafinil in particular, the way it works, it does not have any obvious short-term adverse effects, but the long-term potential for adverse long-term effects is there. Sleep deprivation can be a risk factor for metabolic and endocrine disorders such as obesity and diabetes. Some studies indicating that it can interfere with REM sleep and NREM sleep, or non-rapid eye movement sleep, and that this is important for allowing neural circuits to rest and reset themselves so that they can meet the metabolic demands we normally have during the day. So it still isn't known what the long-term effects are, but these are some of the concerns.
Let's come to memory. It's something of a mental holy grail, isn't it? The fear of losing it, the disabling
yes.
burden of traumatic memories. There's another prospect for neuroenhancement for memory. Ideally, we all think that we'd like to be able to remember more. I wonder if there's a dark side to a drug
yes.
that could help us remember more.
There are two issues here. One is neuroenhancement to increase long-term memory, and the other is neuroenhancement to increase or enhance short-term working memory. And I think the latter is what most people are more concerned with. enhancing those mechanisms in the prefrontal cortex that mediate the short-term working memory so that we can access facts, figures for immediate cognitive tasks. But what's not known is whether there may be an optimal balance of remembering and forgetting. Forgetting a certain amount of information does seem to be essential for us to anticipate the future and to learn new things. So one of the concerns is that if we overload either long-term memory, episodic memory, and or short-term working memory, that there's some question about just how that might affect this balance.
What's the sort of mechanism behind a drug that might promote an increasing memory?
It would act on transcription factor called CREB. That's a cyclic response element binding protein.
So that's literally just a protein that helps switch genes on and off as memories are formed and consolidated in the brain, yeah?
Right, and the connections between synapses that are involved in mediating memory.
Walter Glennon, there's another prospect in relation to memory being trialled as well, and this gets quite ethically concerning. And this is a drug that's being trialled clinically to target traumatic memories, especially those implicated in post-traumatic stress disorder, hugely yes. disabling condition. What's the drug and what's the premise there?
The drug is propranolol. On the one hand, it doesn't raise as many ethical concerns as some of the other agents we were discussing because the purpose is therapeutic. It's not to enhance memory, but rather to try to erase or modulate the negative emotional content of a memory. That is the memory of a traumatic event that the brain simply cannot get rid of. The concern is that with propranolol, it's not known what effects it could have on other memory systems. It's used to target primarily the amygdala in the limbic system of the brain, which is where memories of unconscious, emotionally charged memories, where these memories are consolidated and stored. The rationale is that propranolol as a beta blocker...
So it's actually an antihypertensive drug. It actually reduces adrenaline, doesn't it?
It reduces adrenaline. Adrenaline is thought to play an important role in consolidating memory. So if you block the release, an excessive release of which occurs in PTSD, the hypothesis is that will weaken consolidation and thereby possibly prevent or in some cases maybe even erase the memory. But what the recent research has been doing is not so much trying to erase the memory as to try to attenuate or modulate the emotionally charged content of the memory.
But let's actually paint some legitimate scenarios where this could be used that I think sound pretty ethically disturbing to me. What about as a prophylactic, a preventative medicine? So you give it to soldiers as they're heading into the battleground, witnessing, possibly undertaking inhumane acts of warfare.
Yes.
Give them a pill so that they're not so traumatized by the inhumanity of the context that they're in.
Right. On the one hand, it could protect them, but you're right, it could also blunt the natural fear response and other emotional responses. The ability to feel empathy, remorse, shame, disgust, which are regulated by the amygdala. And here's where the concern comes in, that individuals might end up performing actions that they otherwise would not have performed.
A kind of unemotional fighting machine.
Yes.
Well, I think that would be very sad because part of what we do and part of what in the military they try to do is to look at the situation and to make sure that they're dealing with it, even though it's war, in the most humane way that can be dealt with. So if there was something that actually could dampen your empathy completely, I think it would be a very unfortunate thing in the war situation as it would be in life.
Neuropsychologist Barbara Sahakian. The other question is, of course, we don't know who's at risk of going on to develop post-traumatic stress disorder. Some people process traumatic experiences quite effectively through a sort of natural process of recovery and adjustment.
Right. You could have two individuals experiencing the same traumatic event. One may go on to develop the disorder and the other does not. So predicting this is very, very difficult.
Do we understand really, though, also what memories it does target? I mean, emotional memories are caught up and linked to the full complexity of our memory system. So do we want to be deleting the emotion attached to memories?
That is a big concern. And it isn't clear that researchers could neatly separate the emotional content of a pathological memory from the emotional content of an episodic or positive autobiographical memory.
Mm. With all these so-called smart drugs or neuroenhancement drugs that, you know, boost our memory, suppress negative memories or emotional memories, make us more alert and smarter and sharper and faster, there's a real argument to be made, and I gather people are making it, that we could alienate ourselves from our authentic or true selves, that this is a threat to our authenticity. What do you make of this argument?
I don't agree with that. I think provided that an individual has the capacity to critically reflect on his or her mental states and what they're doing, their actions, including taking a psychotropic agent, I don't see anything intrinsically or inherently morally wrong about that. What really matters is the state of mind of the individual.
But we are propelling ourselves towards a new normal, though, aren't we?
Well, we are, and individuals have this capacity to reflect on their motivational states and act in certain ways, but they will be influenced by what others in society are doing. For example, in the workplace, if many people are taking cognition-enhancing drugs, other individuals may feel some sense of pressure to do that.
Because you'd be at a competitive disadvantage if you didn't.
Exactly. So it's a bit... What I said was a bit oversimplified to think that individuals can make these choices on their own independently of any social influence. That influence is always going to be there, and it's going to have a significant impact on the choices we make.
Bioethicist Walter Glannon, editor of the book Defining Right and Wrong in Brain Science. But with the rise of neuroceuticals, smart drugs, cognitive enhancers, whatever we want to call them, could we be cheating ourselves of life's most valuable lessons? Professor Barbara Sahakian.
But it might be true that sort of a mild stress or learning to overcome problems, mastery of problems, is actually a very good thing. So all of us will have had some bad experiences in our life, and that's part of what forms our personality, and it's also part of what helps us for when we have a real challenge in life to actually meet that challenge successfully rather than to develop PTSD or to develop depression.
Yes, I mean, some people would say that popping a neuroenhancement or smart drug is cheating, frankly.
A number of college students who know that their peers are taking these drugs when they go into exams feel very strongly that it is cheating. You're not really experiencing the benefits of your hard work. So it may be that if we just take a pill, we won't have that same sense of achievement.
It's the drug doping scandal of our mental world, isn't it?
Yes, that's right, and I think it's something that maybe universities will have to think about in the way that sports is regulated, and they're looking very carefully at who's taking drugs, and obviously people in the competition feel it's very unfair if some people are taking drugs and then winning medals. So we'll have to look at what happens for entrance exams into university, for instance. I mean, will the university just decide it's okay if people are going to take drugs, or will they want to know whether they're on cognitive-enhancing drugs or not?
Recently in the New York Times, I was interested to read a feature looking at the population of children now well and truly grown up who have been on antidepressants. You know, they were born into the Prozac era. So they've been on antidepressants all their lives, pretty much. It really reflected on some of these people now experiencing a degree of existential angst about who they were. You know, was their entire existence pharmaceutically mediated in some way?
Yeah, and it's more ethically disturbing in the case of children, because if they've been on antidepressants from an early age, they really haven't gotten to the stage where they were able to develop this critically reflective capacity to identify with their motivational states, that it was mediated all along by the antidepressants.
Obviously, Prozac's a very different sort of drug, but we have to think about these issues. But we could use these drugs to great advantage. I mean, we have an aging population in the UK, and people will probably be living longer, perhaps working longer. Certainly they want to keep a good quality of life and they want to be functionally well. So we may be able to use these drugs to promote mental capital in the future. So they could be of enormous benefit to make sure that we're actually on course to do well. I mean, there may be people we actually would like to enhance, like air traffic controllers or surgeons or whatever. But we have to balance this with how exactly are we using these drugs.
But you've contemplated a brave new future where cognitive enhancing drugs or smart drugs are given to children in the classroom context. I mean, that's a minefield, isn't it?
Well, you mentioned the Nature survey, and I found it particularly interesting there that when they asked people in the survey about whether or not they felt healthy children should receive cognitive enhancing drugs, by far and wide the majority said no. But intriguingly, when asked the question if they felt they would be coerced into giving their child a cognitive enhancing drug if they knew that all the other children in the classroom were on cognitive enhancing drugs, quite a large percentage said yes, they would feel coerced.
I mean, another thing that is a serious point to consider is that pharmaceutical companies are businesses. They are necessarily looking for new markets for their drugs, especially when they come off patent. They're looking for new indications for medications. And this would be a boom for the pharmaceutical industry. If we could find a way of marketing cognitive enhancing medications to the well population, great economics, great business.
Yes, I mean, at the moment, obviously, the pharmaceutical industry is staying away from that, and they have put out reports saying that they're staying away from that, mainly because of the regulatory body at the moment does look for treatments for a disorder. There would have to be, I think, a change in the regulations for that to really take off in a big way.
As we move towards an era where the boundary between treatment and enhancement is blurred when it comes to our brain, what do you think might be the regulatory requirements at this early stage too? Because this stuff's out there on the internet.
Yes, so we can't do much about that because it is on the internet. But I think what the government could do is to start to formulate, probably through the bodies that we already have that deal with medicines, it would be quite easy to just develop drugs for healthy humans. So there'd have to be some discussion about the nature of these studies and what they would look like and how long they would be conducted for. But I think that would be relatively easy to do, and the structures are already in place.
Some people are calling for quite a heavy-handed approach to regulation of these medications or cognitive enhancement drugs. Mm-hmm. What do you think should be the approach we take?
We just don't know enough yet. If there's going to be any sort of strong precautionary principle to the point where there's prohibition of them, we just don't have enough evidence. There are no decisive reasons for having a prohibition. But there are potential risks, and certain regulatory agencies in the U.S., it would be the FDA, do have an obligation to inform people, to warn people that there are risks.
So you think user beware?
Yeah, I think that's the best way to go as a part of a libertarian way of looking at things. They do have the autonomous right to do what they want to their brains, provided that it doesn't result in harm to others.
In the meantime, though, we've got effectively a playground black market, it seems, happening, certainly right. In the US, where children are on-selling their Ritalin prescriptions.
Thing
Surely
for,
that needs regulating.
Yeah, it's one thing for a competent adult who is aware of the risks to purchase Ritalin or...
It's happening in universities too, though.
Yeah, modafinil from the internet. Some people would argue that there should be some sort of regulation, oversight to protect the vulnerable, for example, children. But whatever regulatory agencies are involved here, they have to be very careful not to constrain people's right to do what they think is in their best interest.
Where are you on this one? I'll be interested to know. My guests, Professor Walter Glannon of the University of Calgary, speaking to us from CBC's Vancouver studios, and Professor Barbara Sahakian from the University of Cambridge. And I've popped a stack of relevant reading on All in the Mind's website. where you can stream or download 4 weeks of the show's audio too and read a great archive of transcripts, abc.net.au/rn/allinthemind. And head to the All in the Mind blog to comment on the show and other matters of the psyche. Thanks today to producer Anita Barrow and studio engineer Kerry Dell. I'm Natasha Mitchell. Next week, big name of the brain, split brains, ethics and more with Michael Gazzaniga. Until then, look after that head.
You've been listening to another ABC Radio National podcast. ABC Radio National, on air and online, with many of our programs available as podcasts or MP3 downloads. All the details at abc.net.au/rn/podcast.